And welcome, Colt Cabana, to the show. Colt, you and I had a chance to meet about a, I don't remember where, when it was, about a year and a half ago, but we spoke just briefly, and I've been looking forward to getting a chance to sit down and learn more about you and learn everything that you've learned over the last couple of years. How are you, Colt?
Eric, you don't remember my run in WCW when you hired me?
There's a lot of things I don't remember, brother, about hiring you in WCW. And clearly, you're one of them.
You don't remember my run as Max Muscle?
God, Max Muscle's kind of ringing a bell.
There's no way. No way.
That was me.
No way.
That was me. Get out of here.
I was full. I was 300 pounds of pure steroids. No, that wasn't me. I wish.
Oh, I was about to say, no way. No way.
I wonder how long I could have went away with, like, saying I was some absurd guy and you thinking like maybe it was Colt. I don't know.
Well, you know, it could have lasted for the rest of my life because there were a lot of guys there, you know, in the power plant and guys that, you know, came through early on that I didn't interface with. And it's not the first time somebody would come up to me and go, hey, you remember me? I used to work for you. Oh, sorry as hell about that. But no, I don't.
God, that's happened a lot, huh?
Yeah, too often. Too often. But you got to admit, it was 20 years ago. It was, you know, I was a little busy. I was traveling a lot. Not unusual.
We met at WrestleCon. I want to say, was it Dallas? No. Dallas? No, what was the year before Dallas? New Orleans.
No, it would have been New Orleans. It might have been in California.
I think it was in New Orleans. Yeah, you guys were right across from me in the hallway. And, yeah, it was a nice little chat. Also, I think... Are you Midwest? Is it Minnesota? No, I mean, obviously the AWA stuff was Minnesota, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, I spent 20, 25 years in Minnesota. I grew up watching, you know, Vern Gagne and AWA, but I moved to Atlanta. Now I'm living for the most part in the western part of the United States. I'm in Arizona right now. So I've moved around a lot.
But I think, like, you know, maybe a Chicagoan, a guy who spent a lot of time in Minnesota, maybe there's an instant like, oh, hey, I like this guy.
Well, the Chicago thing, you know, one of my the best places I ever lived was in Chicago. I lived at 720 North Wabash back in the early 80s. And before my wife and I were married, we were living together in a small little studio apartment there. And, you know, I was a doorman and doing whatever I could do to make a buck. And she was a cocktail waitress at a place called BBC over on Division. And it was just a blast. It was like one of the most fun times of our life was living in downtown Chicago.
It's a great city.
I got to ask real quick on that note, Colt, for you being in Chicago, doesn't it kind of feel like all the major wrestlers moved to the coast at some point? Has it been harder for you to stay in Chicago and keep doing what you're doing in the wrestling world?
Eric, your voice got so high pitched all of a sudden.
I know. Sorry. Apologies.
What happened?
Apologies. Jesus.
You know, there's been as an independent wrestler and, you know, a world, Eric, that I don't know. You can tell me how well you know it. It's just like, one of the most important things is central location. So like when these dudes get signed and they all move to California or to be Hollywood stars, they all move to Florida because that's where the tax is cheap. For me, it's always been important. Chicago is so centrally located that, like, if I'm not in demand, like I can always drive to Michigan. I can always drive to Ohio. I can always drive to even Pittsburgh and Louisville and Iowa and Minneapolis. Like, it's so centrally located that you can always kind of get work. So I was always kind of afraid, not that I'd ever want to move anywhere else, but, and you know, when I WWE was making me live in Tampa, and the second I got fired, I moved right back to Chicago because I missed it so much. I just think the town has so much personality. I really like it here. And also, I mean, it's really good for work. And you know, I'm a guy that flies every weekend, too. So, like, it's centrally located in terms of airports. Like, it's a quick flight kind of from everywhere. And also, you know, O'Hare is a nice hub. So it's really, to me, it's kind of not a no-brainer, but I think it's a smart move.
Well, it is a great city. You know, I like to eat. So, you know, other than New York City, probably, you know, some of the best restaurants are in Chicago. I love the food there and the culture. It's just a fun town.
They've got this one place here. You could either get a 6-incher or a 12-inch. It's called Subway. It's so good.
Wow.
You don't even know, man.
Oh, man. Colt, on that note, I know we brought you on here to talk a little bit about your new documentary as well, Wrestling Road Diaries 3, Funny Equals Money. You're obviously a very funny guy. You just made that Subway joke there. right? That was my segue. Thank you.
Very nice.
Now, wait, you've done three of these now. I wanted to real quickly kind of go back a little bit to the first one, which was you and Daniel Bryan together on the road. And that was filmed just before Daniel's big WWE break, correct?
Yeah, pretty wild.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, after you.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's kind of interesting now that you're on the third installment of this documentary series, and Daniel Bryan's career has now already kind of moved into the general manager phase of it. Are you surprised with how quickly his career kind of snapped and went by in the WWE?
Or just how many years I've been wrestling? Maybe that's the other surprise.
Both.
Is how long I've been doing this. And you know, the second one had Gallows after a WWE run.
That's right. Yeah.
Assuming that, you know, nothing would come. And now here he is on television. You know, I don't know. Like the Bryan thing was pretty interesting. And I know, like, obviously I think that helped sales a lot. But also people got to see a concept that they weren't familiar with, was kind of exposing the world to independent wrestling. And that was shot in 2009. And we kind of put it out there in 2011. And I always got to say that, you know, people know the word independent wrestling, but they really don't know unless you're living it, you don't know the culture. At least, you know, 7 years ago, people didn't know the culture or what was really going on or how it really worked. And still to this day, like, people think as an independent wrestler, I love the idea when I see like either tweets or Facebook messages or stuff on Reddit where like, oh yeah, these guys are millionaires. Like, I'm sure they're making millions of dollars on independent wrestling. It's like, oh. It's like, it's such a underground, small time band type thing. And so, to be able to show that world, our world to the wrestling fans, like, documented was such a thing. And it was such a pleasure. And it was something Daniel Bryan and I have wanted to do for years. We had talked about that concept for years. And initially, he wanted to get in an RV and drive around America for 3 months and film it. And I was like, I don't know if we have the budget for that, but I think we have the budget for 10 days and I can get my friend to be a cameraman. And that's kind of what we did. And so this one is a comedy one. And we show the world of independent wrestling, how it works, traveling in the car, sleeping, you know, in different places, low budget shows, smaller shows, a real hardcore grunge kind of independent alternative scene. But also we document comedy wrestling, which has never really been documented before, and at least to this extent, not that I know of. And we kind of break down how you can make funny in wrestling and not make it stupid, because there's a lot of stupid comedy out there. But I'm very proud of the comedy wrestling that I do, and Kikutaro is a legend in Japanese wrestling and the world, and so is Grado. So I brought over two dudes. One from Japan, one from Scotland, and then we toured the Midwest as a little sideshow. It's really cool.
That sounds like a blast. I'm not saying this because you're on a show, but that sounds like something I'm going to go out of my way to check out, because that's a cool idea. Congrats to you for doing it.
Well, I'll send you a link, but don't tell anybody, okay, Eric?
Okay, it'll be our secret. you're talking a lot about independent wrestling, and I know very little of it. You know what I mean? I came from AWA, small company, went to WCW, clearly not a small company, or wasn't at the time, you know, spent a little time in WWE and a little time somewhere else. But I never really got exposed much to the indie scene until the last couple of years, quite frankly, showing up at, you know, WrestleCon type events and, you know, Comic Cons and autographs and all that kind of crap, which I love doing, by the way, don't get me wrong. But I never really stepped too deeply into the indie scene, and I find it fascinating. I have in the last year or two, and I always tell people it reminds me of why I was a wrestling fan in the first place, before WCW and before WWE and before, you know, whatever. But it does have that kind of organic, just good energy that I do kind of dig.
Intimate, too. And I think that's the most important thing, is that I'll talk a lot. You know, I talked to a lot of my friends that were like, I guess when I was in the WWE system and people that I became friends with that never did the indies. And it's like, I think kind of big time wrestling, you get a check and people just, you know, like you let this company make you a star, and it's hard to like figure out who your fans are and why they're your fans. Whereas when you're an independent wrestler, you know, especially me, I'm a guy that started at the bottom. I was never a guy that could walk into a power plant and be like, oh, put him on TV, you know? So I kind of had to work my way like the hard way up. And it was like, you really saw, it's like you see on the ground level of what's working and why it's working. And you meet the fans, and like, there's no security guards like telling you, you can't meet this person. Like as a wrestler, you kind of like, a lot of times you go out and you like find those fans and you like hunt them down to like be able to say hi and get yourself kind of over with them. So that intimacy is something that's just, and that's on all levels, you know? You know, so many times, you know, I just wrestled at the thing called The Fest in Gainesville this weekend. And you all right? Am I making you sick?
Yeah, it's fine. Yes, no, ignore me. I apologize.
Yeah, I can only imagine what you're doing on the other end of that phone there, Austin.
No, just waking up. Thank you.
Sure. So... yeah, right.
What is this, Conan show? Jesus, come on.
So yeah, so you know, a lot of people in bands came up to me and they were like, "Dude, I listen to your podcast, and like we live the same lifestyle, and comedians, and I have such a bond with a lot of comedians, a lot of bands, and even like who came up to me? A guy was a God, I want to say like a clown a chef was telling me how similar." Our lifestyles are. So it's a lot of people can relate to it. It's like the independent circuit, you're really starting from the bottom and you really get a good grasp of what people want to see. And you really get it. You really get to meet your real true fans, which is very cool.
Do you think that, before I ask you this question, I'm going to ask a different one. How much change have you seen in the
35 cents
in the independent scene over the last, 3 or 4 years, has it evolved much? Is there a cultural shift? Is there anything changing over the last 4 or 5 years you can point to?
Well, here's the big thing. A lot of people always knew me for years as the guy who would sit at the merchandise table and try to sell you a picture or a t-shirt. And I did that in 2003. I quit my real job and I became a full-time wrestler on the idea that I would try to make $100 to wrestle. And no, I'm sorry. On the idea that, I would try to make $100 to wrestle and $50 in merchandise. If I could do $75 to wrestle and $75 in merchandise, that was fine. I would try to do 6 shows and make $150 a show. And that was how I was going to live and survive a month. And so I was, because I wanted to do this for a living. And at that time, the idea of being an independent wrestler and doing it for a living on these small shows was not a thing. So it was usually me, Chris Hero, and maybe a couple other people at the merchandise table. No one else even thought of even to buy pictures or anything, maybe just pictures. But I always kind of had a little mini swap meet. Come 2009, 2010, I'm back on the indie scene. I'm still doing that. And then I start a company with my friend Pro Wrestling Tees. And then like the Young Bucks and Kevin Steen and all these guys, Joey Ryan, I'll start making a bunch of money and then realizing how valuable t-shirts are. As merchandise. And now 4 years after, 5 years later, I'll go to a show and I'll see every single wrestler with a merchandise spot. Guys who've had their first or second matches are there with 3 t-shirts, wristbands, wrist guards. And I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. It's just pretty crazy that I remember the days where it was me and like Johnny Stewart, who I know you remember. I love that reaction. It was just me and Johnny Stewart were the only ones selling merch, and now it's literally everyone, including the referee, I've seen them out there, which always makes me laugh.
I have to know about Johnny Stewart now. You guys laugh too hard, and I have no idea why you're laughing.
I didn't laugh. Eric laughed.
Eric, why are we laughing?
No, I didn't laugh. I groaned, and then you laughed, which made me laugh. That's how that all went down.
The illustrious Johnny Stewart was going to be the second coming of the Nature Boy Ric Flair on AWA television. Is that correct?
Yeah. Look, I didn't really get to know Johnny on a personal level, but he was pretty obnoxious.
He was a frat boy.
Yeah, he was a frat boy, and he had a very, very high opinion of himself. But you know, he tried. He gave it his best, and. Yeah, that's about all I can say. But yeah, we didn't hang out. Let's put it that way.
He lived in the town that he was on a lot of the first shows that I wrestled on. And it turned out he lived in the same town that I was born in, and I was in charge of a sports camp, and he was also, he sent his kids to that sports camp. So I was his kid's camp counselor in a small world.
How about the interest now? And this is where I was going with my, before I interrupted myself in my previous question, but
we could talk about Johnny Stewart if you want more.
No, I don't want to talk about Johnny Stewart anymore. I had forgotten all about him. He went into the category of people that I forgot about. Sometimes I try to forget about people. WWE is taking a closer look, obviously, at the independent scene and a lot of the guys that are doing well as independent wrestlers. They've invested in Flow Sports, which is another way to bring independent wrestling to more people through that platform. Do you think that WWE's interest and bigger business like Flow Sports interest in the independent scene, do you think that will change the scene in any kind of a negative way, or do you think it will continue to grow the independent scene?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. I obviously don't have like an answer. I don't think anyone does. You know what? When I was there, I was kind of laughed at for the independent wrestling being my, being the way that I came up. Like I had any other choice, you know, it was really frowned upon. And so as you know, I was kind of laughed at when I had a podcast. So like, you know, in 2010 when I started this, so, you know, it's always kind of taken them a couple years to get a little bit, and you know, in front of the times, if you will. And so it just took them a long time to realize that, like, oh, all our stars were independent wrestling stars, and we tried to hide it and then make these other guys our stars. But the people that have come through, you know, that have come through that system, like, that weren't supposed to, are all these guys that cut their teeth and, like, I think it's just coming to them now that, like, oh, it's a valuable place and people actually do learn and do become good wrestlers on that scene. So it just took them a long time. And so I think because of that, they're just going to pay more attention, which might mean that they'll grab a couple guys before they're ready and put them within their system. But that's kind of always happened. You know, I remember in 2003, Paul London was like a big, you know, a big guy on the independent scene, and they grabbed him. And it's just like, every time a Paul London gets plucked from the scene, somebody else will come up. And so it's not like they can have 1,000 guys on their roster. So I weirdly kind of believe that when someone leaves, someone else will make their name for themselves. You know, the same thing kind of happened in Ring of Honor when TNA started plucking a lot of talent in like 2005 or 2006 and Samoa Joe and Austin Aries and Daniels and all, and then, you know, all these guys just started leaving and just people filled the spots. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, guys like myself and Daniel Bryan and Nigel, we all had these opportunities to become stars. And I think it did happen. So, I just think to be honest, when you guys were doing your stuff with the Attitude Era and the late 90s, independent wrestling was like thriving. There was like thousands of people at these shows when I would start. It was pretty crazy. And then there was a big lull. And so I think now that like WWE is saying, hey guys, independent wrestling is cool, there's all these cool guys coming from there, all these other wrestling fans are like, well, wrestling doesn't come to my town every week, you know, or WWE doesn't come to me every week or every month, so I'm going to try to check out these shows. I didn't even know these things were around. And I think a lot of people are now figuring out that these shows are around and using the internet to find the best shows. And I think it's making for some really awesome shows and a lot more people kind of coming out to them.
I really hope it does grow the WWE's interest as well as these other companies like Flow Sports who are now migrating to the independent wrestling scene. I really do hope it grows it, because from where I sit, and again, not being involved in the indie scene at all, but just watching it from a distance, it reminds me a little bit of the old territory days. And that's one of the things, even early on at WCW, you know, the guys that I was surrounded with, whether it be Dusty Rhodes or Ole Anderson or Mike Graham, or, you know, guys that had a lot more experience than I did, especially guys that were wrestlers, it was, you know, their constant bitch was, you know, with the territories being down, there's nowhere for these guys to learn, because they didn't believe that you could really take somebody off the street, no matter how athletic they may be or passionate they may be about wrestling, and put them in a power plant scenario and get them ready for television, because you had to go out and have matches in front of people and get down on the floor, as you discussed earlier, and seek out those fans or learn firsthand what's resonating with the audience. And there's no way you can artificially teach that. You just have to do it. And I'm hoping that with WWE's interest in elevating guys off the indie scene, as you suggested, you know, Daniel Bryan and Kevin Owen, a lot of other guys, that the indie scene emerges, it grows, it gets healthier, because it'll just create better talent. I just don't believe you could crank them out of a factory and expect to have stars. They've got to learn the real way.
One of the downsides for the flow, so I agree with that, and I think that's what all of us felt like, especially in like the late 90s, mid 2000s, when the territories were totally dead. We were like, we don't have territories, so this is our territories. And a lot of us tried to work 3, 4, 5 times a week. You know, I, along with a lot of other people, kind of sometimes we'd go to England where you could wrestle 7 times, 8 times a week. But one of the problems might be with like all now WWE being like, the independents are cool, is the independents, you know, what will happen is they'll lose their punk rock edge, which is like kind of what makes it cool. You know, when corporate America or corporate wrestling puts their stamp on it, you kind of lose that coolness. So, like, if you notice guys like PWG, who have been the coolest forever, like, they turned down Flow Sports within a second, and they turned down everybody. And they're like, we just want to keep our punk rock thing happening. So, it'll be funny to see how quickly everybody sells out for, you know, whatever Flow Sports is giving to some of these indies. And it'll be cool to see the couple guys who are like, screw you, we're doing our own thing, and it's cool, and we don't need your money. So I almost look forward to wrestling for those guys a little more. Guys like ICW, who are doing their huge show at the end of November in Scotland in front of 5,000 people at the SCC. Those guys, like ICW and PWG, still kind of have that punk rock spirit. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a little bit like in the music industry. You know, you're an independent music artist. You've got your own following. People discover you. And then all of a sudden, you sign for a major label, and it's like...
Right,
you're dead. Yep. We don't want you anymore. Do not come to our party anymore.
Yes. You have to. It's weird. You have to find that balance of like what's acceptable and what's not. You know.
I want to ask real quick, Colt. Well, I got you here. You know, the WWE is obviously seeing the value in the independents right now, and they've started putting money into companies like Evolve and have created relationships with other indies kind of across the company or the country. Do you think that that's good, that there's more influence from the WWE on the independents, or do you wish that there would be more separation there?
I mean, I think I kind of said it, that like with it's the punk rock thing, like, you know, it's just a weird balance. Like, you have to find the right balance. Like, it's great that these guys can go on the CWC and then go back to the independents and finally make some, you know, be able to move up their price and be well known and people wanting to go see them. But also, you know, then all of a sudden these guys now are like on eggshells and they don't want to screw up, and now they've lost that independent spirit that's like driven them to this point. So it's kind of weird, man. Like, WWE is a weird place. Like, the second you get there, it's happened to all my friends, including myself. Like, there's just stuff that you're like, oh, I don't want to make anyone mad. And then that's when you start putting shackles on yourself creatively. And like, I know it's not as much anymore, but like, people still have in their head, they don't want to make anyone mad. And like, you get, you know, controversy creates cash, baby. You know what I'm saying? That's a quote I came up with. I don't know if you've heard of it.
let me write that down.
Yeah, write that down. You know, so, but like, and Eric, you could probably, like, best on that, like, probably Scott and Kevin probably didn't give, they didn't probably care at all. They're like, we're just going to do whatever's cool. And like, that's when that stuff blew up. And that's not happening. And that's not going to happen with the independent guys that have like a little, that are getting a little WWE money. Because they want to, and good for them. They, you know, this is the first time they probably ever made any kind of money, so they want to keep that money flowing. So it's just, I feel it might hinder them a little bit, but for them, for their sake, you know, I'm very happy that they're able to get paid, make some money, and get a bigger name on the indies.
Yeah, it is definitely it's a rock and a hard place in WWE, and even myself, even though I wasn't a wrestler, as a character. Especially given the circumstances when I got there, you know, it's one of the reasons we talked about it on the show last week with Joey Styles. But one of the reasons I would always just stay off by myself, you know, I didn't really socialize much. And it's not that I was aloof or distant or anything. It's just that, as you said, Colt, you know, you just don't want to get too close to the politics. You don't want to piss somebody off, because sometimes you can piss somebody off without even trying or knowing that you're doing it, just by associating with a certain person or being involved with a certain group of people. It's easier just to kind of keep your head down, stay off the radar, and do your job. But that's also a good way to become obscure, especially as a young talent.
Right. Yep. It's such a weird thing. Like, these people, even like, and we were talking a little bit before about social media, like, sometimes these guys have these great social media posts and they're really funny. And yeah, you say the F word in it or whatever a couple times, who cares? But they do now, you know? And so now their social media presence isn't as cool or funny anymore.
You become sterilized with the Titan training, as Hulk Hogan calls it, Titan training. Cole, you mentioned a little while ago, you know, 2010, you started your podcast. And I remember talking to you at the event where we first met. And you were talking about your podcast, and you and I talked about maybe me coming to Chicago and being on it and all that. How is the podcast business, other than the fact that it's grown exponentially since you started it, but how has that changed the world of independent wrestling?
Well, I mean, it's changed my life unbelievably. And I always say that, you know, it's like WWE fired me. I went to try to get a tryout with TNA. TNA said they had zero interest in me, even though I had this wonderful dark match at the time, which was sad. And then Ring of Honor actually fired me too. And I was like, well, I guess nobody wants me, or I'm not liked, or, you know, I have no place here. If these guys all think I'm shit, I must be shit. And I had the podcast, and like, that was my only outlet. And I had so many fans and so many people who really, really liked me and enjoyed me and liked what I did and liked my comedy and liked my comedy and wrestling and enjoyed me as a wrestler. And we could chat through that medium, that, you know, that's kind of what kept me in wrestling and kept me alive and kind of actually made me a star in wrestling. It was the only place, I was the only company that realized my own star. And sometimes that's how it has to be, sadly, in my case, greatly. So it changed my life in terms of that. I started. And then, you know, it was the first place that wrestlers ever had an opportunity to have one-on-one conversations, long form together, instead of being interviewed by some guy, you know, who had a radio station, or some guy who's just a fan who wasn't really in the day-to-day wrestling industry and kind of didn't know the nuances, or thought they did, but really wasn't part of the grind like we were in the locker room. And these were the chats I was having in the locker room. And I remember listening to The Nerdist once, which is a podcast by Chris Hardwick, where he talks to comedians, and somebody saying that, like, yeah, you guys changed comedy, where people started coming out to shows because they felt that they knew you. They weren't coming shows just to hear a guy tell jokes. They were coming to shows to watch a guy who they really knew and they wanted to really support. And so, like, basically anything they would say was funny. And I felt that's what, in the early days, I felt what was happening was, these guys were coming on the shows and people were coming. They were listening to the shows and they were coming to indie shows, and they came because they wanted to really support and root on that person that they felt that they knew. And that wasn't a thing that had really happened in the past, because it's hard to know somebody who's on, you know, television in front of 4.1 million people or whatever it is every Monday. You know, that's a whole show. And this was a real breakdown of who people were. And then fans were really getting to know these people for who they were. And I think that aspect of it really changed the game, is fans became not only fans, and that might upset a lot of, you know, behind the scenes people, but I think fans became fans of not only just these bigger characters, but also the people behind the people playing the bigger characters.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about that. When I was running WCW, there was a time, and I don't remember the research group, but somebody within Turner Broadcasting, not within WCW, but up above us within Turner Broadcasting, was desperately trying to figure out, why does wrestling work? Why is it so successful? Why has it lasted so long on television? What is it about this product that keeps people coming back? And really, it's been that way since the beginning of television time, right? And all this money that Turner Broadcasting spent on this research, they came back with something that is really kind of obvious, but they had to learn it themselves. But one of the reasons they found that wrestling worked, which is the same thing that you're talking about, the same dynamic with podcasting, is that wrestling, when it was a territory system, it was in your small town. every single week, you know, whether it was the southeast part of the United States or even in territories around the Midwest that I was familiar with, you know, wrestling was a staple item. You may not be able to go to a football game. You may not be able to get, you know, the Rolling Stones don't come around every year, but professional wrestling, those guys that you saw on TV also came to smaller venues back in those territory days. And the audience felt like they got to know those people because they came to their hometown. It's a different dynamic. The podcast is a different dynamic, but the cultural phenomenon is the same. Wrestling works and has worked for so long because the audience during certain phases of the industry felt like they knew those wrestlers personally. And now you're saying the same dynamic happens as a result of podcasting. And I think it's interesting.
Yeah. And also, like, sometimes I'll be at a show in like small town. Cause right. As I'm an independent wrestler, I wrestle all of these small towns all over the world. And like, I have a podcast. I have another podcast on it's called howl.fm, and it's a premium site, but I do these shows where I talk about I do a storytelling show actually about some of the weirder things in professional wrestling. And before it, I have this little monologue every episode where I'm like, I've wrestled for the Inuits in northern Canada. I've wrestled on the border towns of Mexico. I've wrestled at fat camps. I've wrestled for the Insane Clown Posse. Like, I go over all these weird places, and sometimes I'll be in this like really small town, and like next to me will be like, you know, Billy Gunn is like always kind of my example, because it's like, man, he was such a star. And now he's like, this is what we do as wrestlers. Like, well, if you're not on TV, you just go wherever the work is. And it's like, he was a television god, you know, like on TV, millions of people. And now he's in Paducah, whatever. And like, not mad about it, you know, but like, that's just what you do as wrestlers, is we go to these. Well, have you been to LaSalle for Dreamwave yet?
Yeah, I have actually. I had a ball there.
Yeah, that's a great example of like, so they always bring in all these big stars every month. So it's like Bret Hart. Like, if I lived in LaSalle, Illinois, and I was like, I get to see Bret Hart, and then I get to see Eric Bischoff, and then I get to see 1-2-3 Kid. Like, why are they coming to my small, crappy town of LaSalle, Illinois? And like, that's what I love about Dreamwave, is that like, it does. And someone set it up, and wrestlers, of course, because they want the work, they're going to come to LaSalle, Illinois every month. And I that idea is always like, I always kind of catch myself catching that, if that makes sense.
You know, to be really honest, I go to these events in indie shows, and I go to different ones for different reasons. A lot of it has to do with timing, or if I'm going to be, for example, with LaSalle, I needed to be in Chicago anyway, and I can work them in. But to be really transparent about it, there has been times, and LaSalle is a perfect example. I pulled into that town and I tried to find a motel. And the only place I could, there was only one in town. I checked into my room, and honest to God, I walked in and it smelled like an old butcher shop. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody slaughtered dogs or cats or something on the carpet and just left. It was horrible. So I ended up sleeping in my car. I had a couple hours to kill. So I just said, I'll find a parking lot, you know, left the air conditioning on. It was in the summer. And I was really kind of depressed. You know, it's kind of like, why did I decide to do this? Until I got to the building. And then the energy is so good, and people are so excited to see someone who's been on television before. And it, again, like I said earlier, it just reminds me that enthusiasm, that genuine enthusiasm that you see, not only with the crowd, because they get excited, obviously, but just with all the talent. It makes you feel really good, just for the record. It's a good feeling.
Yeah, and I don't say it happens a lot, but that's something I could definitely relate to is well, for me, a little bit different, because like, I have an independent wrestling podcast. So like, that story of sleeping in my car and going into the small town and opening up, like, as I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, this is a great story to tell. Like, so it's kind of gives me material in a stand-up comedy kind of way, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But yeah, there's a lot of times where for me, being in the ring always kind of like, sometimes it, not like, what am I doing? But I'll be like, ugh, I'm kind of down today. And for me personally, being in the ring always takes that away. It's kind of, I know it's cliche, but it's just, I really become happy and I really enjoy myself. And not to bring it all back, but I figured out a long time ago that like, I want, like, if that's my only time that I'm going to be like the happiest, like, I want to make sure I'm doing it on my terms. And so my favorite style of wrestling is comedy. So like, I'm pretty good at like regular wrestling, you know, catch as catch can or whatever it might be. And I could definitely get away with anything, but I make myself laugh and I have the best time when I'm just goofing off and being myself, and being myself as comedy wrestling. So comedy wrestling is what I love to do, and it's why I do it, because I feel my happiest when I'm doing it. And that's, you know, obviously what we're documenting in this movie is like how that style works. And that's a big reason why I do it.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that. Before we let you go, since we've got you on the podcast and now that I'm trying to do one, tell me what I need to do to make my podcast better. Yes. What would you, if you were my producer, what would you tell me to do?
Well, I did tell TJ this, who's I think producing, is so the number one thing in my mind is crisp audio, and it's not that hard. And I know you've got money, Eric. So I know you made a couple bucks in your heyday. You know, like people. So people are going to give you 5 minutes. And then if they don't like your show, they're not going to, there's so many options out there. They're not going to listen to it for another, they'll probably give you a chance in another, you know, 4 years, if that's the case. So you want to make sure that you get them right away and people are on board right away. And you only have, you know, X amount of time before they're like, yeah, I'm over this one. And so crisp audio is so important. That's why I always travel with my podcast equipment, and I always do my, and this, no, this is obviously, you know, you don't have the opportunity like I do, like I'm able to travel all over the world. I always do my podcast in person. I have a real nice setup. I have a real nice microphone in my apartment. My audio is very crisp. And like, you could crisp audio right away. People are like, okay, this person is invested in a podcast. They're invested in making this sound good. This is something like, that's the first reason. And then there's so many other reasons why you could turn it off right away. But that's the first one, is why people won't turn it away. They'll be like, all right, this sounds good. And then on top of that, natural, you know, and I'm not sure, you know, I don't know what you guys are or aren't doing, but obviously natural enthusiasm and wanting to be there and really enjoying it, and also having a message. This is just to everyone trying to podcast, have a message, have something you stand for, have a point of view. Like, just if you're just on the fence, like, and you're not really saying something, we're all equal here. We all have an iTunes stream and that's it. Nobody's better than anybody else. Like, so if you have something important to say, say it, and stick to your guns and stick to what you're saying and have a point of view. And so those are a couple of things I'd say right off the bat that are very important.
Okay. Well, I'd like to have you back here in about 6 months, maybe listen to the show once or twice, come back and give us some more help, because those are good tips and I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
All right. Nick, you got anything else for Colt before we let him go? Get back to his life?
No, I mean, I got my high-pitched voice over here. I'm coughing like Conan. I feel like I've gotten everything I need in out of this conversation. So
You're doing great.
Thank you. No, I'm always a big fan of Cabana. I'm glad you could come on the show, Colt, and chat it up with us here.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Colt Cabana. My website is ColtCabana.com. You can see everything there. I did talk, if you want to hear more, that obscure Howl series, howl.fm/Colt, and you can hear one of the storytelling shows that I do. They're pretty cool. I have a new series coming out. I have a new season coming out November 9th. And then the Wrestling Road Diaries, that's all available at coltmerch.com, 1, 2, and 3. I have combos you can do if you want to buy all three of them. And then I have shirts, and I'm always on the road. Come see me in person. All my appearances are on my website. And Eric, you could tell him I've been asking since we met, and I've been trying to get you on, but we never find each other in person. You were supposed to be in Toronto. I was hopefully going to do a podcast with you in Toronto a couple weeks back, but you unfortunately couldn't do it. And I can't wait to have you on my show.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I will be coming to Chicago soon, so I'm sure we're going to make that happen.
Keep me updated.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much, Colt.